All right. Hello and welcome to this not quite official and yet still semi-official episode of the Nonprofits. I'm Matt Delaney. Joining me this week, Schilling is now back and a regular, which we've been waiting for. Has it been like almost 2 years?
It's been over 2 years.
It's been over
about two and a half.
Wow. Did you get all degreed up and specialized and edumacated?
Yeah.
Good. So originally what we were going to do today, we've got Jacob Kramer from the National Atheist Party, on, and he was here ready to go right before 10:30, and I was here partially awake right before 10:30. Schilling was here ready to go at 10:30, but Russell and Linnea had they're out apartment hunting, and Dennis had another issue, and so what we decided to do is instead of doing a regular live-streamed version of the show, we're going to sit here and have a discussion with Jacob about the National Atheist Party. So, Jacob, welcome. Make sure you're unmuted. Nope, can't hear you at all. Not one bit. Oh, wait. Yes, I probably can. I probably muted you here.
Oh.
There you go. You're fine.
Ah, yes. Is that better?
Yeah. So thanks for coming on.
Well, thank you for having me. It's good to meet you through the Skype.
Yeah. And, you know, I've had a lot of discussions about this. People started to email me about the National Atheist Party probably 6 or 7 months ago, you know, saying, oh, there's this Facebook page and the National Atheist Party and things like that.
Probably both encouraging and also very hostile, mocking things, I'm sure.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's been some people who are like, you should go check this out because, you know, I'm doing this and, you know, we'd like to know what you guys think about this. And there's others who have been kind of hostile to the idea. And there's others who, kind of like me, just have lots and lots and lots of questions. Because, I mean, just to be clear, in this room right here, we've got two atheists. We would have had four or possibly five who are friends, who do a show regularly, who are part of an organization, the Atheist Community of Austin, which, by the way, has official position statements. That's something that I actually put in place. It took a couple of years to get hammered out, but our position statements are actually now up on our website. And it's because our organization is set up with a charter that supports church-state separation. And so we spent a lot of time, almost 2 years, arguing over what sort of positions we as an organization were comfortable having and which ones derived specifically from church-state separation issues. And also making sure that the language is such that membership in the ACA in no way implies that a specific member agrees with all of those position statements.
Of course.
So on that front, I don't have any issue with the idea that there could be, you know, national organizations with position state. That's not the thing. I think, why don't you give us a quick kind of background and overview of the National Atheist Party, and we'll go to questions after that.
Yeah, well, I agree with you. Anybody who comes in and gets involved in any kind of large organization where you're kind of ascribing yourself certain values and political positions, you should have a lot of questions. And we expect that, but we want people to approach our organization, you know, honestly and kind of research into it. We began in March 2011, founded by Mark Smith and Troy Boyle, who had seen the interview with Richard Dawkins. And he says, you know, atheists, he's surprised atheists don't exert their political power because there could be a sizable voting bloc. And like you, I admin the, you know, how I've gradually come into atheist act in various ways, but I admin the atheist Facebook page, which I'm still active. It's a group of 30,000 wonderful people and community. And I support any type of atheist community organization whatsoever. So when I saw the National Atheist Party, right as it's just starting within that first month, post on my page, I'm like, you know, I will support this and share this with my members. And I'm also going to investigate to make sure these aren't just a few wackos on the internet, to make sure that they're, you know, polling and trying to gather consensus from their membership and democratically voting and forming an actual charter, you know, similar to that the major parties have, and that these are serious individuals. So I, you know, I got to know them and became involved and saw that they were. And we've just gradually grown. We're the National Atheist Party because we seek to represent this demographic as a voting bloc. And we, you know, we seek to just ask the question, is there a consensus to be had on these issues? And, you know, there's some internal polling and other polling and polling by, a small organization I belong to that does some advocacy and publishes stuff, supportatheism.com, where we kind of asked political issues and found, yes, there can be, issues where there's, consensus to be reached. And just like you said, you may join a political party or organization, you may not support everything that they do, but, you join a political party organization because you generally support them in specific issues. And if they eventually get to the point where they can run candidates, then you look at that candidate and you make a choice and an informed decision based on them. And that's what we ask people to do. We want every single person who's an atheist or a secular advocate or supports our values and wants to influence this to have their say. That includes people that wouldn't necessarily support even three-fourths of the charter now. We would like them to come engage in civil discussion and debate, register as a member. And when we do have, platform addendums or amendments to vote upon, and we have executive board where you can find out what they support, although executive board doesn't make policy, if any policy change our platform, members will vote upon and have their say. So, we get argued that, we're the National Atheist Party and that's exclusionary. We feel like we just want to be honest about who we are and who we're trying to represent. We also want to change the public perception of what atheists are and say, here's the consensus of what atheists advocate politically. And it's reasonable and it's humane, whether you agree with it or not. It's not out of left field and it's not trying to take away the freedom of religion. It actually wants to protect it and take it out of the public sphere.
And that's I think one of the things that's been kind of a sticking point to me is kind of the last little bit that you just said and the way it's stated. And that is that here's what atheists think. And I think one of the distinctions between, for example, like the ACA and what I've seen so far from the National Atheist Party is that while the ACA has position statements, we're not saying here's what atheists think. It's here's what our organization thinks. And part of my concern is that as the National Atheist Party, and not only do you give implicitly this impression that the positions of the National Atheist Party are those of atheists, but now you actually also kind of say that. And that's a potential misrepresentation.
It could be. I mean, the argument against that is, if you are a Democrat or if you're not a Democrat and they vote and don't support fully your issues, is that an issue because you support democracy but you don't support what that party is doing? If you support civil liberties, and you're not a libertarian, is that an issue? Are they usurping that? The problem is, we just want to be honest about who we are and who we're trying to represent. We also, or make a decision, and the membership voted. I mean, that's the thing. It started as the National Freethought Party, and there is as much hate and uproar about that, and there's still a split, and there's still constant discussion. Every time you get a swath of new members, the discussion about the name happens all over again. And there's arguments like what you say, and there's arguments that I really don't like and turn my stomach that we need to start out disingenuously and kind of use a political ploy to. For the people who are going to attack us, no matter what we call ourselves, they know what a free thinker is, a humanist, or a secularist is. Those are people who don't think it's reasonable to believe in a God, and it's a person who threatens their beliefs and changes what their vision of the world would be. So we voted and wanted to be honest. So that's the main reason it's the name, because people voted.
Well, I'm in agreement on being honest about names, but
I would like to question the analogy you mentioned with, being pro-democracy, not necessarily being a Democrat, or supporting civil liberties without necessarily being a libertarian.
yes,
There's
and
a
your right to hold those values just because they've used that name.
right, but there's a key difference insofar as both
That
of
it's a
those parties
demographic
are named
modifier.
for political philosophies. Atheism is not a political philosophy, so that I mean that's a bit of a difference right there, because even if you're not a libertarian, it is clearly, it should be called the Libertarian Party because that's the philosophy they've chosen to adopt.
Yeah, it's a, if you're a
Well,
there's this libertarian philosophy or the democratic philosophy that exists, and so if you're part of that, this is where you come. But there's not an atheist philosophy that exists so that we can say if you're a part of this is where you come. Instead, it looks like the National Atheist Party has put together a list of positions that, granted, and I may well agree with the overwhelming majority of them, but and this kind of goes to the name. Actually, I think I would have been, I would have probably opted, I'm in favor of being honest, but I think I would have opted to stick with the National Free Thought or even go down a more secular humanist route, because those are at least, I guess, broader, broader views, atheism being a rather narrow thing. I mean, there's no requirement that any two atheists agree on anything other than the God question.
Yeah. Well, I mean, everybody of how they justify or, I guess, acknowledge and accept why the name is the way it is versus, you know, I just can't join. I don't care what they believe in because I don't like the name and what it potentially represents. You know, has that right, and they all will have their different responses. There's a number of reasons why I think it should be the National Atheist Party and why I supported it. Would I have joined it if it was the National Secularist Party and became involved? You know, I probably would have. I would have maybe not been as initially excited, but, you know, it just depends. You know, the issue is that it is a demographic modifier, and people may have a reaction, no matter what that is, to say, well, there shouldn't be political parties based on demographic modifiers. Although there are in this country and there are in other countries, there's a long history of political parties being founded by certain demographics. But it's the same thing. So if you go back to the libertarian policy and party analogy, a libertarian who doesn't support all of those issues in the libertarian party, does that mean they can't claim the label that I'm a libertarian anymore? And the issue is that we would like every single atheist and secular advocate to have a say. And if every single atheist and secular advocate did, and we would support the things, advocate for the things we can find consensus upon. If we couldn't find consensus on political issues, we would not advocate for those because that's not what our members believe. And it's really that simple. And obviously, if atheists and free thinkers, secular advocates don't get involved with the party, it's not going to be as representative. If they do, then it is a complete and accurate representation of what, you know, a consensus majority of 66, you know, greater than 66% of the people vote for the platform support. And it'll be clearly outlined, and it will be that, you know, these are the shared values that atheists have. But obviously that's an issue. We know how many people just vote. Are we really Americans because only, and I can't remember what the last percentage of people actually vote in national elections, you know, do we actually believe these things as Americans if we disagree, but only a small, you know, portion of Americans actually vote? You know, so how do we really know what American values are?
Well, I don't think there are American values.
Well, and frankly, I don't think voting percentage is terribly relevant.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Because I'll vote when I see a candidate worth voting for. Otherwise, I'm not going to vote. But there's a difference between wanting to vote and wanting the right to vote. The right to vote is very important to me. It's similar to my position of I want the right to gay marriage. I want the right to marry a man. I'm not homosexual, so there's no use of it for me. It's more of a principal thing of the right, and so
get a good tax break.
Just like to have options, I understand.
You could get a good tax break out of it. I mean, if I hadn't already gotten married, we could get married, share some bills.
Yeah,
I mean that's one of the arguments against it that the fear mongers have used is, oh, you're just going to have straight men run around marrying each other for the tax break. Well, so what? I don't think that's likely to happen, but so what
if
it does?
You give that right to heterosexual people, which they can totally abuse.
Yeah,
you know, gay people should be able to abuse the laws as well.
Yeah, it's not like anybody's never married somebody for a green card or for their money.
Values and policy decisions on something like atheism, which as we said, it's not a political philosophy, so it tends to be a consensus on, for example, your platform. But an immediate potential problem I can see is no party can put everything in their platform and everything on their position statements. And so what tool does your party have to offer when it comes to addressing an issue that is not already covered by these consensus-built position statements? With what philosophy do you approach new problems?
Well, I can tell you how we formed our initial platform planks and then voted and approved the charter. Going forward, we have, you know, policy committees whose job is to, you know, provide sources and education on the issues to our membership and to draft submissions to add to the charter that we currently have. To the advisory council we have an executive board. Our job as executive board is to look at those policy suggestions or policy statements they released or platform amendments and say, does this reflect our current principles and values that have already been defined in the platform and been voted by membership or that are, you know, in our preamble and stated values? Then those will go on and membership will vote. And they can, if we receive a majority vote of, you know, greater than 66%, those will be added to our platform. You're absolutely right. our platform, and really I wanted us to be further along at this point, but we're an all-volunteer national organization. I basically work in working, you know, my job and this job full times, you know.
I know how
probably
that feels.
80 hours a day. Yes, and thank God there's that there's people crazy enough like us, you know, to
yeah.
To say, you know, I didn't mean to say thank God, but yeah, you know what I mean.
That's all right. I say it.
That happens. But you're absolutely right. I want our platform to be more specific and to address more and ask more questions about what can we find consensus upon. And the things that we can't reach that consensus about, we won't. And eventually, when we apply to FEC, and because we're currently a 527 political organization to run candidates, it's just like any other party. The candidates will have to decide, well, where do I specifically fall on this issue? You know, so we support that our membership voted that we support healthcare as a right, and that Medicare program should be expanded and given broader access. Now, there's all kinds of ways to do that. There's all kinds of different single payer systems. There's all kinds of ways to, you know, enact a public option that would fulfill that obligation. And most political parties don't offer specific policy proposals on how to go about doing that. That's up to the candidates who are currently running and active to propose, you know, do. We may say that we need to agree that we need to, you know, renounce the Bush tax cuts and have a fairer tax system, a simpler tax system. But we currently don't, you know, haven't addressed and polled our members on, like, you know, doing some form of VAT tax. That would be for the candidates to do. So you're absolutely right that, you know, we don't, you know, we could endorse more specific issues, and we want to ask those questions. And where we can't find consensus upon as an organization, we won't advocate them.
I think I'd be bothered if we got, you know, if the positions were too specific.
Yeah.
One of the things, for the first time in many years, I'm actually following the GOP primary rather closely. And I like the fact that, you know, you've got some baseline position that is fiscally conservative, and then you have the candidates offering what their views within that scope are, and people, you know, vote that way. If there was, or they pick from those candidates. If the fiscal policy in the actual party platform was too overly specific, and by the way, I've seen it where, you know, party candidates can disagree with the party on a specific point and still, you know, be largely supported. So this isn't my, I guess my nagging concerns aren't so much that I don't agree with some point in the platform and therefore, oh, no, I want nothing to do with that. I think I'm part of organizations where I have disagreements on several things.
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, that's the norm. Like, you know, on a normal Saturday in here, there'd be four or five of us in here. And there's considerable disagreement between us as friends and as coworkers on this show on any number of subjects. So that's not so much the issue. And so when I looked at this, I'm thinking, why is it that I'm having such a sticking point actually supporting this? Because when I look through the policies, I'm in agreement, you know, with probably more policy positions on the National Atheist Party's charter than I am on the Democratic Party or anybody else's.
Mm-hmm.
And there's several points that I think are sticking points for me. One, you had talked about, you know, honestly representing who we are. And I think that there's a nagging concern in my head that this isn't necessarily honest because there's no, because my position is that you cannot get from atheism to any other position without adding something else. And the consensus that we're seeing on the Atheist Party platform, which I'll say again, I agree with the overwhelming majority of it, is not because we're atheists, but it's because we are secularists, which is a much broader philosophical position than atheist, or it's because we're, many of us are humanists, which is a much more, you know, not necessarily fiscal position, but a social philosophy. And so those seem to be the kind of linchpin foundations more so than atheism. Atheism seems to be a result of, or consistent with, but not a cause And so, yeah, I'm always going to be a little stuck on the name because it's, you know, in some ways I think it works against what some atheist organizations might be trying to do, which is to say, you know, no gods, no masters, no leaders, the question everything, think skeptically, think critically, and you don't need to necessarily agree with us on X, Y, or Z. Those are things we can discuss after we, you know, come to terms with the God issue or separate from the God issue.
I at the same point, I'm exactly like you. This platform is probably the one that I can most agree with out of any, even though I'm still, you know, currently a registered Democrat, even though I have voted for Libertarians and I have voted for Republicans in the past. You know, I vote on the candidate. You know, there's issues that I would change in this. You know, the thing to understand, because I think you have said before, is that our party position is not based on atheism. It's based on what the common values we hold, and those values are secularism, you know, secular values and humanist values, and those are articulated in our charter and that are in there. To me, I don't know, it's a difference of approach. I think there's enough people who, and we take the hardline view of what atheist is, that it's just somebody who, you know, don't believe, don't think it reasonable to say that a God exists. And anybody, you know, who says that is an atheist. So, it, you know, all the other names that people call themselves to us, at least at the executive level, we would say they're atheists, whether they say they're Gnostics and things like that. And we realize people like to call themselves all kinds of different things. We just want to ask the question is, like, are there largely commonly held values? And can we represent and advocate them in an open way and show that atheists and the people who would want to fall under that banner or support our values are a sizable voting block? We're very realistic and not, you know, too crazy about what the outcome could be, you know, as far as the point of doing political advocacy and, you know, on issues and engaging and confronting candidates about the things that we want to advocate for. And eventually when we're running candidates, you know, people come on all the time and say, are you running, you know, a president in this election? And we're like, you know, no. Or do you expect to have, you know, candidates in all the states? And, you know, like, no. It's like, it's going to be, when we get large enough, you know, mobilize enough members and activists, have enough funds, are able to apply as an FEC political party, we'll probably have to focus in, you know, two or three states. We'll probably have, you know, a few elections, and we'll have to build from there. But, and we may not be able to, you know, flip a federal congressional district or maybe even a state congressional district first. But if we can garner, you know, 10-12% of the vote, and that forces the people that are running to engage us in conversation, it supports, it forces them to maybe undercut and adopt some of the issues of our party into theirs, which is what the Republicans have done with the Tea Party. And we're fine with that. We want to be a part of the discussion on political policy. We want to be acknowledged. And I understand it and take your points completely. And the thing is, it's one of those things that I think what you're saying is completely true, completely valid. And I think what I'm saying is true and valid. And it's a matter of approach and it's a matter of perception. And choosing the name National Atheist Party is definitely a risk. It's a risk that we in leadership and people that have voted at the very beginning, and granted it was a smaller amount, that may change. It may be something that we'll readdress in the future. Sure. As I always point out, the Republican Party used to be the Democratic Party. you know, so things change. But it's a risk that we think it's worth taking. And from our polling and interaction and just the actual vote of the charter, which I didn't fully explain how that came into being. I explained how we are proceeding forward, we'll form our policy positions. We want to find what that consensus is and represent it, and we want to ask those questions. Another great organization that I'll plug really quick, I came in contact with Mary Ellen Sykes, who used to serve on the board, the founding board, I believe, is of the Secular Coalition for America. And she started the American Secular Census, which I think you can find if you search Secular Census. And she is asking some of those same questions. And it's just mm-hmm. a census that will actually connect you to all of your representatives as well in your states, you know, at the federal level, and give you all kinds of information about them. And it asks kind of some of these political and demographic questions to find out what is there that is in common with the atheist demographic. And that's something, you know, the larger, you know, number she gets in there in her database, and to give those results, she can link those results to federal congressmen and say, you know, there's this many atheists and free thinkers that are in your district, and here's the things that they believe in. So
sure.
That's also a great organization.
I think Chilling's got something he was wanting to ask.
Well, while I'm behind the idea of trying to get some sort of voting block mentality in this and trying to get organized power, why would a party be a better way to do that than simply a politically oriented organization, something along the lines of Americans United or Freedom From Religion Foundation or some of these other types of organizations? Because as a party, that forces you, one, to be a much broader view. You know, you can't just focus on the issues that are clearly related to atheism. And then, two, in terms of either running candidates or endorsing candidates, I mean, those things seem like you're going to shoot yourselves in the foot attempting, for example, to endorse a candidate, because I can't imagine how many candidates want an endorsement from that group. Even if they agree with you, that's going to be politically harmful to them.
Maybe the first things that the National Atheist Party can do would be to, like, endorse
Newt Gingrich.
Yeah.
We've thought about that. As a 527 organization, and I don't know if you guys have been, like, watching Colbert and his talk about PACs and all those things, which we're not, you know, officially PAC, there's a slight difference, but as a 527 organization, we kind of have the same rules. It's like, we can't specifically and directly endorse a candidate.
Right.
Although it's a very gray area. They, you know, moveon.org, Swift Boat Veterans, you know, with the tech heads, those were 527s. Like, so they very clearly take stances on candidates. And, you know, being the nature of what we are and how controversial and how the more attention we get, you know, and we just had some national press, and the more that happens, we will be attacked by scary people. We're already getting some scary people coming out of the woodwork and coming into our groups and things like that now that we've got more notice.
Yeah, and I'm sure they'll be trying to link you to the National Socialist Party and any number of other things that have nothing to do with this. I know, you know, as a 527, you've got slightly more freedom than our organization does on political issues. We're 501c3, and so we're nonpartisan, which means that even if I completely agreed with you guys, I would be walking on very dangerous ground to endorse you, you know, or to push people in that direction. But what we can do is talk about and comment on issues. And one of the things that the ACA's had, I'm going to call it a success, was our voter's guide, which we've done a couple of times now, and in which, since we're a Texas organization, we focused on every candidate that was running for any office that Texans would vote on. Now, that meant that there were some, of course, national campaigns or national races, but also a lot of local races. And we sent out, we put together a list of like 20 questions or 22 questions or something, and sent it out to everybody who was running for any of those positions. It was 400 or 500 people we sent this out to. And the goal, of course, was we need to make our voices heard. We need to force every candidate in every election to address the issues and acknowledge that they are representing secular individuals, atheists, free thinkers, what have you, and that our positions, to the extent that we share a position, can't be ignored. And yet what we got was the overwhelming majority of people refused to respond, just never sent anything back. Of the responses that we got, they were overwhelmingly returned from libertarians, and there were a handful of Democrats and a handful of Republicans. And the reason I call this a success, wow, I can't even speak this morning, is that the fact that the results that we didn't get back told us quite a bit, not explicitly, because, you know, well, maybe I didn't get your questionnaire type thing, but the fact that, you know, the distribution of what was sent out compared to what was returned gave us quite a bit of information. But also, one of the things that I found out is that libertarians were all over the map. On any given question, you would have libertarian candidates replying, you know, strongly agree or strongly disagree, and everything in between. So when I look at something like the National Atheist Party, where you have a little bit more leeway on political issues, and you've talked about the secular polling, from SEA and other organizations. What are your kind of immediate plans to make use of the National Atheist Party to, I mean, you can't endorse candidates, but what is it? What's the next step? I mean, is it voters guide? Is it just, you know, constantly pinging candidates and trying to get news coverage so that we're not sidelined as second class citizens? What is it?
Yeah, I want to ask a question. I don't feel I answered that first question, that the two-part one that Schilling asked me. I feel like I didn't address it. Do you remember what that was? I feel bad because I don't feel like I answered that question. I didn't answer for it.
Was that the one of why a political party is better at addressing atheistic concerns
insofar that
it has to be more broad than that?
Let me answer that one real quick. I mean, it's very simple because you listed other organizations, and so my point would be that those organizations already exist. We fully support them. We did an official endorsement of the SCA. We work in communication, have members for American Atheist in there. Our point is that there's no atheist, you know, or secular political party. And, you know, my point of view is that, you know, the battle for a more rational world, you know, and a secular government needs to be fought on every single front. And this is one where nobody has taken those steps, so we're taking those first steps.
Well, the question is of the nature of that step, because let's take race. If there was a political party, and there probably is one for, you know, any given group that's struggling out there somewhere, but an established political party that put themselves out there as representing Black Americans, do you think that they would accomplish anything that isn't better accomplished by organizations such as the NAACP, or, you know, just politically oriented organizations that focus on the issues that do directly relate to what unites them, and avoid going into areas where there's no tie at all?
Well, you know, I think they could. It depends on the nature of organization. It depends on the execution. So that's a big, wide-open question I wouldn't know how to answer. You know, it's kind of the same thing with NAACP. Can they really represent all colored people? And because I'm a white person, how is it that I, you know, don't feel disenfranchised by supporting a lot of the things that they do? They could certainly do that, and there's, you know, districts or you know, states where they could run it and have a significant influence on the minority vote, which would force the other parties to have a change in rhetoric and change the discussion. So, you know, I think they certainly could have an effect.
Right,
whether it be a positive one or not, it depends on the organization and how effective it depends.
But they have the capability to focus on issues that are relevant to what their organization supports. Mm-hmm. For example, I've not heard a lot. They might have some positions, but I've not heard a lot from them or from the ADL, for example, on, you know, the nuances of foreign policy or things that, you know, really they understand that their group is going to have a lot of shared concerns, and they address just those and they leave everything else because it essentially detracts or distracts from the overall message. And do you feel that having policies on things that are not directly related to separation of church and state or promotion of science, you know, things that skeptics and atheists tend to go with, do you think that having to focus on so many things that are completely separate from that might be a distraction?
Well, I mean, even the thing you said about supportive science, we say that because we kind of know from anecdotal experience and being in the community, but, you know, appreciation or respect or knowledge of science, you know, doesn't by definition, because everybody always wants to tell me what the definition of atheist is and why we can't call ourselves an atheist party, it doesn't necessarily have to be had to make you an atheist. The demographic modifier for me as a National Atheist Party is maybe more relevant and meaningful in a political context than if it was a race or ethnicity. Although race or ethnicity definitely has and can lead to a common experience, a common cultural influence that can lead to common conclusions about things, even things like foreign policy, you know, such as, you know, Palestinian-Israeli conflict. That's a constant kind of ethnic political issue that's, you know, has a lot of lobbying backing in our country. But to me, atheists, and what brings us together, and Matt, you know, very well pointed out some of those common values, it's a value of evidence-based conclusions. It's a common approach to reality. And to us, it's not necessarily this, but it is part of our party platform, but that, we make evidence conclusions about policy in the world based on, what best reduces or what best benefits, individual and societal well-being. And that, to me, that's the values behind what an atheist is and their approach.
But really,
so kind of have an intellectual approach is it, and the way you see the world and reality is more meaningful than possibly, ethnicity or race in the political format.
But I mean, I imagine pretty much any party would say that they support the idea of individual and societal well-being. That's sort of this wispy notion that every party wants to support. The question isn't whether or not you support that. The question is, how do you propose the best route to get there? How do you manage the balance when those things are in conflict? Mm-hmm. And like the Israeli-Palestine conflict is a good example. How do you address that representing atheists unless it's just, well, this won the vote, so this is what we're going with? I don't see how you can have an underpinning philosophy from atheism that gives you a position on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. So it just ends up being a series of popular positions within the party.
Well, it could be, and it might sometimes amount to that. I've got a good example for that, actually. Well, we follow a line when I say evidence conclusions on policy that best supports individual societal well-being. I kind of, probably a lot of your audience is familiar with Sam Harris. I believe that we can and do have the ability to, qualitatively measure in some ways, suffering societally and in individuals. And we can have conclusions about that. We can say, does this healthcare policy result in higher mortality rates? Does it result in, more efficient hospitals where they're having less infections? And say, this is suffering. And so what is the best policy solution for that? Does our position in, Israeli, and Palestinian conflict, how is this helping us and our individual citizens? How is it producing, animosity, prolonging the conflict in that region? And we can take those measures. It may be difficult, but I think, as atheists and as the outcome, the principles of our party, that's our approach to answer that question. One thing to kind of specifically address is in the popular position issue, where is that's concerned. For me, really the one key platform issue, I really want to develop our education, because there's so many things I think we don't address our education platform, because I am a teacher. Our position, and you may know it very well because that's where this movement was founded, on tort reform, on those things. And that is, an astroturfed issue that was actually pushed by organizations that Karl Rove set up in Texas, and that tort reform movement to get rid of those, basically subvert, the jury system in those issues, and subvert, the right of individual citizens to challenge, large corporations or anybody who is neglectful, and for that jury to ascribe punitive damages. That's a completely astroturfed issue in Texas. The savings that you had, insurance rates actually increased after that policy. It's completely ineffective, and it's completely morally wrong. Our membership voted for the kind of words and language that's pretty conservative on tort reform, and to me, I think our members need to be more informed about it. It's something that needs to be challenged. It's something that I don't think reflects our party's values. So that would be an example of me personally, where I differ with our platform, and I think it doesn't reflect our values, and that is a danger that can happen in any party or any organization. That is a concern, and that's why you have an executive board, that's why you have founding principles, and that's why we have to engage in the difficult and bureaucratic process of, hopefully in the next platform agenda, presenting information to our memberships, educating for people who have some experience and expertise, and asking them to review that information and, please reconsider and vote again. And that's, what we plan to do, and then that's been a point of discussion for a while.
So
that's a legitimate concern for sure.
So going back, I'm completely on board with this idea of objective standards with regard to societal health and even morality, et cetera. Not that you've got no quarrel here. I've been championing that. I was running around talking about it even before Sam's Moral Landscape came out. It brings me back to the same problem, is that my reason for that has nothing to do with my atheism. As a matter of fact, my atheism is the result of the same processes that lead to that. But I don't want to get back to this this thing about the name,
yeah.
Because I know that you've got to go shortly, and so do we. But I want to give you an opportunity to kind of close out it in a moment about, you know, what the immediate plans are and going forward, the thing that I was talking about a minute ago, and also to give him, you know, information is key here. So I want to make sure that the people who don't have the same reservations that I do, or the people who are interested in pursuing this further, you know, by the way, you can all go to usanap.org, which is the website for this, and you can even look at the charter. The one thing that kind of struck me, and that's kind of been the sticking point, and I understand now how all of this came to be, that it was a various proposals voted on by the membership, and of course the membership early on was evidently, you know, small, and as it grows these positions may change, as long as there's, you know, the two-thirds support. But as I sat here and I rolled over, I remember, because I'm on the page now, I'm actually looking at the Article 11 National Atheist Party platform, and I remember my first impression when I came across this page was, oh, here's their platforms. Economy, jobs, Social Security, Medicare, healthcare, abortion, gay rights, education, immigration, guns, environment, energy, tax reform, legal tort reform, campaign finance reform, security, defense, foreign policy, faith, religion, organ donation. And so I went down the list, and before I even read any of the actual positions, I looked at the categories of the positions, and I found myself in a rather strange state, because clearly those are the categories that you would expect of a national political party. We're going to have some position on these various issues. And I'm not just going to go back to the name thing. It wasn't so much that it was a surprise to see that from the National Atheist Party. It was, I had to sit here and go through and not only figure out which ones of these I agree with, but I kept struggling with this idea that even the ones that I agree with, I don't agree with because I'm an atheist. It's my, you know, the whole consistent with but not caused by thing again. But I will say that this is, if you can completely set aside any reservations of the name, going through this, I am encouraged by the fact that secular individuals, no matter what they may call themselves, have started working on broader platforms to, you know, it may be that you end up with 20 secular organizations with 20 different views on what each of these, you know, platforms are going to be. But it was at least encouraging to do that. So I'm going to kind of give you the opportunity to talk about what's happening going forward and kind of bring us towards a close today.
Sure. Like you said, even that process of looking through those and trying to figure out, well, what do I support and where they stand is reflect that that's a valuable process. And we want more, you know, we want to engage atheists and secular advocates to take part in. To answer the question of how we formed that, we had kind of exploratory. We had kind of a committee that we set up of like 8 people, and they did research and found out what are the issues that we should address. And they came up with those 18 platform planks. Then we offered a range of choices from very conservative to very, very liberal, and allowed our membership to vote on general positions on those. And then where they voted is what you see in the platform. And we kind of drafted the language around it. And then we did a formal vote of membership when our membership was larger to approve the platform or the charter, and they approved it. So that was a process how we came to that. It wasn't like, you know, completely just random. So to answer your question about where we're going, obviously, right now, it's kind of a battle of getting your name out there. It's a battle of trying to build membership and to educate people about what we truly are and what we're trying to represent. And it's just, you know, it's kind of, if you have reservations about the name or about some of the issues, we just want you to come in and have your say. You know, even if you're a member who isn't active or volunteering or going to meetings to talk about the NAP or you know, going up to your congressman, you know, lobbying for the things that we support, or making policy statements that we share from our state chapters about laws that are being passed or attempted in the states. We would like people to be there, be a part of the discussion, or at least, you know, register as voting members. And whenever you propose a platform issue or addendum, you know, have your say. It's like, no, I don't agree with this. I vote it down, or yes, and be a part of the conversation so we can find out if we are really representative. The more people that say, I don't support the platform right now, so I'm not even going to try to join the conversation, well, then that's the best way that you're not going to be represented. What we are doing going forward is, right now nationally, is we're trying to engage the community more, be more active. So it is about getting the name out, but we are releasing four national campaigns. We've already released one, which is a very kind of simple one that any individual can do, and any individual can do that isn't even involved with the party. We want to expand it out. It's that we have a page on Facebook, and we're going to keep a directory of all our politicians and all the candidates who are running for office, and we want our members to go up, try to get it recorded, filmed, or on tape, or get it written if you're sending out emailers, and ask the question, how will you represent your atheist voters? And leave it as an open question. Obviously, there's specific laws in your states as part of prayer exemptions for healthcare for children, religious exemptions for housing subsidies. There's issues of politicians like John Shimkus in my state who wants to be on the energy committee, who thinks we don't need to worry about climate change because Noah, God promised Noah he wouldn't destroy the world again.
That's true.
There should be specific issues that you want to follow up, but we want to first ask them that general question and let them think about how they would even answer that. And even if it's a no comment, we want to get all of them on the record. So that's our first campaign. We have a page on Facebook, What Will You Do for Atheist Voters, that you can link to or look through our site, find more information about that. The second one, because we also want to, in the community, give back, give chances for our membership to be mobilized. We're going to offer two scholarships that we're going to start collecting for. And one is for secular political activism. Students who are either going on to study activism or political administration or justice in school, and who have shown that they've engaged in secular political activism as students, as members of their community. And the second one will be for people pursuing degrees in applied sciences. So that's our second campaign. The third one is going to be that we want to focus on a singular issue because we are a small fledgling organization. We want to, at least on the national level, have something that we are specifically going after. And it's something that we may have to wait until March when we have our executive board elections. So we're having our board elections in March, and any platform amendments that memberships bring to vote upon or that we submit will be voted on as well. Those elections cost a lot of money, and we're trying to make sure our members of the national state chapters who are doing kind of activism or printing out things can be reimbursed. So buying the kind of the small polls on those things to find out is kind of difficult. So donations are welcome. You can donate on our main page. But we want to find a central core issue that we can rally around nationally and lobby congressmen about, that we can focus on in all 50 states and the District of Columbia. We have yet to define what that is. I've done some initial polling. We kind of have a short list of our general membership, but the people who have actually registered members, we want them to decide. This is the national issue that we are going to engage on nationally and put our money towards. Individual states, we empower our state chapter leaders for any individual laws that are going on to go confront their congressmen, to write and share policy statements, to get groups or demonstrations together. So we empower them as long as they confirm with us to take action within their states. The fourth one is going to be, and it's a difficult one that we've yet to decide, that we want to have charitable action groups within each state that people that small groups can proceed upon. So Atheist Helping Homeless is a great one,
and that's here in Austin.
You know him.
Of course I know Joe.
In Chicago. Go ahead, sorry.
No, of course we know Joe. I can't say enough good things about what Joe Zemeckis is doing. Joe, by the way, was one of the original ACA people who put together the TV show. Madeline Murray O'Hara had a TV show way back when, and Joe was in the early forming one of the early forming members of the ACA who started off our TV show. And what he's gone on to do, for those who aren't aware, which I can't believe anybody listening to the show isn't aware since we've talked about it before, Joe is working with other atheists here in Austin in the Atheist Helping the Homeless project, which we have a fairly significant homeless population in Austin, and often they'll meet downtown under the major overpass down by 6th Street or so. And a lot of times churches, and we're going, and they still do, churches go down and they actually hold like church services and give out food. And what Atheists Helping the Homeless, which, by the way, I love the AH acronym for it, was doing was going down, and it started off with them just handing out food and, you know, not even necessarily saying who they were. And people would say, you know, oh, what church are you with? Oh, we're not with any church. We're atheists. We're just here to give you the food. You know, you don't have to listen to our sermon before you get your sandwich. And so that has been growing. I've seen some good coverage, both on the local news and nationally, you know, and different things. Yeah. And I'd like to say also that, you know, as we're kind of coming to end this special quasi episode of Nonprofits, I don't know how much my position on NAP has changed over the course of, you know, the last hour or so, but I will say that I think you've done a great job of answering questions and addressing things.
Thank you.
And the one thing that there's actually a couple things that I know we're in absolute agreement on is activism is critical, and any organization that is encouraging activism, especially political activism, with regard to church separation issues, is, you know, something that I'm in favor of. But I would also say that I'm a little more comfortable with the idea that whatever NAP is now, and however much you may agree or disagree with it, right down to whether or not you're in line with the name, one of the fact that you're encouraging people to participate, and that this participation may result in changes, and it could even, I'm kind of guessing here, that it could even result in another name change if that became a major issue to everybody involved or something. But the fact that it's open to being an honest representation of the demographic that it's purporting to represent is something that I find encouraging. So,
yeah, that's definitely the case. I mean, one of the things that people come and accuse us of is that you're putting in the mouth of things that I believe, and they'll accuse us, you know, and especially being more public and on, you know, the executive board, of doing that. And the thing is, that's the last thing that we or I want to do. And I'm one of the staunchest people on the executive board because I'm an outreach and I kind of oversee PR and any statements that we release to respond to current events or policy issues, is that the executive board has to look at it and approve and prepare it to our platform and charter that members have voted on, and make sure that it you know, that if it is creating by a policy statement on a current, you know, piece of legislation that's being passed, if it's kind of, you know, by just the act of releasing a policy statement on that, that we're kind of defining the position of our membership through that, mm-hmm. and representing them, that we are very careful making sure that it aligns with our values, you know, as stated are. Because by releasing policy statements responding to current events, we are kind of speaking as a voice.
Yeah, it's one of those.
And doing it without membership voting. But we are very careful about that on executive board. No single member of the executive board or personal leadership makes policy. We want our members to make policy, and we want to be true to that at all times. You know, in the future, we may release, you know, released the general support of the Occupy movement. We didn't, you know, necessarily support specific tenets or things that they're all advocating. We support the general principle of, you know, there is huge income inequality in this nation. There's something that's broken, and that's something that we do address and say in our you know, our platform issue. And so we support, like you said, people demonstrating on these issues and trying to engage. And we released a statement of that, but, you know, there is some people who say, you know, this Occupy movement is stupid and we don't want to be involved, you know, and don't try to tie this to the atheist movement. It's like, we're not releasing a general statement of, you know, agreement for political activism and engaging on the general tenets of that movement. So
that's an area where, you know, I can not only agree, but sympathize. And the way the ACA's charter is set up, it's in our constitution, the president is the only person who is authorized to speak on behalf of the organization, although the president can designate. Well, I've been the president since the president position came available. So for the last 6 years, I've been basically the only person who's authorized to speak on behalf of the ACA. Yeah. And yet I don't. I'm extremely cautious about this. I not only take steps to make sure that I don't give the impression that I'm speaking on behalf of individual members, but also I very rarely speak on behalf of the organization unless it's something that we've discussed with the board or something that's part of our position statements or something that's directly in our charter. And it's one of those things where you've been given, you know, or you know, adopted this particular power and responsibility. And so I'm kind of extra cautious to say, you know, this, I'm talking about what I think. And for those of you who agree, great, let's get this and work together. And, you know, to the extent, like I said before about the positions, I probably agree with more of them than I do with anybody else. And so working together along those lines is something that I at least find appealing. So as we, I'll go ahead and give you the last word before we roll the music to get us out of here. But I wanted to say, Jacob, thanks a lot for coming on. And, you know, it may be the case that we can have you on again in the future when more people are here and run some questions back and forth, or, you know, get anybody else from NAP on to talk about things. And anytime you guys have got a, you know, a new major initiative or something you're pushing out, well, I say anytime. It may be the case that there are certain things you're pushing that were just, you know, blocked from advertising, but we'd certainly like to know about it and do what we can to keep the lines of communication open and encouraging people to be active, irrespective of what their views are.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. So we're not going to be necessarily specifically endorsing candidates, you know, for a long time. So the things that we're doing, you know, two of the next national campaigns is, you know, are basically charitable acts. So, I mean, you definitely would want to let people know about that. We definitely, you know, once we offer those scholarships, we're going to let the Secular Student Alliance know about that. We want to let the atheist community know that, you know, we want to give back, and by doing so, kind of define what we stand for and what we value as a party. And the, you know, the other ones are, you know, just the question campaign. Ask your representative this. So, you know, they're not necessarily asking you to take specific stances. And, you know, some organizations are very reluctant because we are of our political nature. But right now we're just trying to engage meaningfully in the community. I really appreciate you guys giving me the chance to talk to you and the very fair interview, you know, and the very intelligent and quality questions that I received that I really think will help illuminate anybody who might happen to listen to this. I just give a plug for usanap.org. We are on Facebook. We have state chapter groups that are on Facebook that you can join in to kind of have general discussion in every single state in the District of Columbia. So you can search for that and join and be a part of the conversation. We want to see if there can be consensus on the issues, if the common values and approach to reality that Matt talked about that led us to the conclusion that makes us atheists and led us to be this demographic, which is not represented politically in this country and has never been since this founding of this country. We want you there having your say to see what we can agree upon so that we can be a part of the discussion in the political sphere in a way that has not been done before.
Okay, and nonprofits will be back next week, potentially with more of this, maybe twice as many. That would be nice. And we'll discuss some of the more recent news stories. For example, there's the issue that's going on with a Facebook posting in India, was it, or was it Pakistan? Where was it? The big furor over some sort of posting of a demographic.
Indonesia.
Oh, yeah, that's it.
The Indonesian atheist who is now being attacked.
Right.
Yeah.
And a lot of the attacks going on there, and there have been, as I recall, a few new incidents of young women being attacked in Israel by some hardliners there.
There's a ton of news stories that we hope don't fall by the wayside. We hope there's not a bunch of stuff that happens over the course of the next week so that things continue to fall out of the range of a weekly show. One of the things that we'd asked for was for people to send in atheists that more people should know about. And the first submission I got was Graydon Square, who's the atheist rapper, been around for many years, was actually at the Texas Freethought Convention doing stuff as well. So I wanted to make sure that email got acknowledged. The plan, I'm gonna start the music in a minute, but the plan is for us to be back next week with the full crew covering news bits and having broader discussions. And we may or may not be hearing from the National Atheist Party again in the near future, but we appreciate everybody tuning in, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.